and welcome to the Waterways Ireland podcast with me, Turtle Bunbury. If you've been following this series since the beginning, you'll know we have been talking all about the history of the waterways. And we're going to return to the history in due course, but for now we're going to shift direction and take a more contemporary perspective on the waterways as I talk with some men and women who know these rivers and lakes very well. On this episode, I'm joined by the charming lock keeper John O'Neill, who spoke to me about growing up on the River Barrow and his remarkable aunt, who also worked as a lock keeper on the Barrow for many years. The River Barrow is Ireland's second longest river after the Shannon. It rises in the Slieve Bloom Mountains and courses through Kildare and Carlow and Wexford before reaching the sea at Waterford Harbour. It's been a busy waterway since records began. In an earlier podcast, I referred to the various monasteries and churches along the river. The river, the Barrow, was made navigable from St Mullins to Athy in the 1790s by the construction of, well, multiple weirs and bypass canals and also 23 locks. Several of those locks were located just south of Bagnallstown in County Carlow, including Ballyellen, Sligough and Fenniscourt. John O'Neill was the lock keeper at Fenniscourt for 33 years, and he still lives in the area. I interviewed John through the power of remote technology, and I began by asking him to explain his family connection to the locality.
My dad worked on a farm which was across the river from us here. So he went over and back every day in a boat to work, and he had an old paddle left in the boat. No one ever touched him for years and years now, you know, that he was working on the farm. His way there was over in the boat in the morning, home at lunchtime, back again, and home in the evening. So four times a day he crossed the river.
Wow. Okay. And I mean, that must have been quite tricky at some times.
Yeah. When the flood came up real high, when it came up, we'll say halfway, we used to call it, you know, it wasn't in a raging flood. It was difficult then. But then when it came up high enough that the water came out over the bank, he was able to sail the boat across the main river, come across the walkway, paddle up along the field and almost got to our back door before he got out of the boat, you know.
So, wow, okay.
He did that for years and years.
That's a very unusual way to get to work.
But yes, yeah.
And actually, was it unusual? Were there many people who were doing that?
No one else that I knew of, no.
And those locks, the Fenniscourt and Sligough and Ballyellen, they're all the original sort of 1790s locks, although I presume they've had a lot of work on them over the years. A
lot of work on them, and the lock gates have been changed. Sometimes there might be only a beam of a gate or a loggerhead or whatever that would need a replacement. They wouldn't change the whole gate unless it needed to be changed, you know. But the system was never changed in all the years since they were first put in. The system remained the same. No one found a better way, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the engineering and technology of those olden times is really so impressive. But, John, let's talk about your aunt, Maggie Gorman. She was one of very few female lock keepers in Ireland. What can you tell us about her?
I never knew how she came to be a lock keeper, but she married Paddy Gorman. And the first time I went to see Maggie Gorman, and I wouldn't have known her well before this, was down to Sligough Lock House. And she was living there at that time. I was very young at the time now, you know. So I was 6 or 7, and she had 3 children there at that time. And the youngest of the 3 then was Jimmy, and he was my age. And when we got down there then, there was a wood right close by the house. It was in the farmer's place. And that farmer's place, Maggie's husband, Paddy, my uncle Paddy, he worked on the farm there. So when I would go down there, then my mum or dad, or maybe the two of them, would go down for a walk. And that was like another world to me at that time down there. And Jimmy then, the youngest of the 3 children, the two of us would go up the wood then. And we were told when we were coming back, we were to bring back a bundle of sticks for the fire as well. So we used to go up there and get lost in the wood and make 3 houses and whatever young lads did at the time. and we'd lose all track of time. But at the same time, we also knew that when Maggie wanted us to go back home, and we had no idea, like I say, of time, she had a whistle hanging on the back door, right inside the back door, and she always told us it was a referee's whistle. And when she'd want us then to go back home, it might be dinner time, tea time or whatever, she'd go out to the back door and she'd blow the whistle. And we'd know then it was time to head home, that the food was on the table, then it was time to get back. And there were no mobile phones.
No, but that's very effective, isn't it?
Yes, that worked. It worked, yeah. And here, no matter where you were in the wood, you heard the whistle blowing.
Okay, so. And she was a woman to be obeyed by the sounds of things.
Yes, yeah. Well, if you didn't get down in time, you had no dinner, so you didn't miss out on that, you know.
And she kept a cow too. Tell me about her cow.
Well, every lock keeper down along had their own cattle. Now, she only had the one cow, but they all kept the cows for the milk. You went to town once a week, like, and she had a mile and a half of a barrow track to go. And, like, remember, she was on a bicycle then, you know. So she'd go a mile and a half up to the nearest road. And then she had another mile or nearly 2 miles to go to the nearest shop. Once a week is all she went to town, did her weekly shopping, brought it home. There was no fridges. There was no electric in the house even.
Ask about the house. Okay, so she's in. I presume one of the original lockkeepers' cottages.
Yes.
A two-story number. What, yeah. Did you remember the house? Or
remembered well, yeah. The house, was a beautiful place. Now, in the summer, it was a beautiful place. There was a kitchen and a sitting room downstairs and a little back kitchen or a scullery. And upstairs then there was 3 bedrooms. It was a fine big house, and the house came like as a perk of the job. So I think that's what drew her into the job as well, you know, a free house. She had free firing then off of the bank of the river. That was one of the perks as well. And they had the grazing, and that was all the 3 perks that came with the job. There was no electric. Tilly lamps at night time and flash lamps and stuff like that, you know, oil lamps.
And those are the perks of the job. Which are lovely perks, but it's still quite a lot of hard work for Maggie. Paddy was working on the farm every day, and so yes. She was doing all the lockkeeper's business. What would that have involved for Maggie?
I don't know how she reached all the work she had to do, because any boats that came the way, she had to be there to get the locks ready and put the boats through. And she had to write down the name of the number of the boat, what time it passed at. And along with that, then she had to paint the lock gates every year. She had to mow the grass all around the lock gates. But then on top of mowing the grass at the lock gates, I often seen her out with her side. And the middle bank at that time, there was about 2 acres of ground there. That was the ground across the lock gate. She'd go out there with the side and cut down the grass. And that was the hay. That the hay would be turned and saved then and brought into the hay barn. That was the feeding then for the cow for the winter. And then a few weeks after cutting, after taking the hay off of that couple of acres, I was there one evening, and I was amazed at this. She put a halter on the cow then and swam the cow across the river to the middle bank. And it wasn't a bother getting them in. The cows, it seems, it was used to doing this, and stepped out at the far side. And then he had 2 acres of fresh grazing for the next month again, you know, over there.
Well, that's a good reason for the cow to go over.
Yeah, yeah. So there was no bother getting the cow to go across.
The cow followed the same path as your dad going across the river.
Yes, yeah.
To the other side.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, was that usual, John? I mean, would you have seen cattle and animals generally crossing the river?
No. Never seen it anywhere else before or after that, putting a halter on a cow to swim them over for the grazing, you know.
Brilliant. So. Excellent. Well, she was clearly quite a woman, Maggie.
She could turn her hand to anything, yeah. Like I say, I don't know how she managed all the work, because when she'd get up in the morning, the first thing she had to do was get the 3 children ready. And there was more children came after, like she wasn't even, that wasn't her complete family, you know. But the 3 of them were going to school at this time. And the first thing she had to do was well, get Paddy out to work, get him his breakfast, get the three children ready for school. And
would they walk to school somewhere nearby? Or?
Yeah, no, it wasn't nearby. It was Bagnestown School, which was at least 3 miles away.
And how would they get there?
I'll tell you now, she'd get him out in the morning and she'd get out the bicycle and she'd put the three school bags on the bicycle and push the bicycle up along, walking with the three children up to Fenniscourt Lock. And that was the 1.5 miles up the riverbank. And then there was another, at least another 1.5 miles or 2 miles into the school on the road. But the children had to go on their own from there. Once they got to the road, they were on their own then. And so she'd cycle back home. She had to have Paddy's dinner ready for 1 o'clock. Then he'd be down for his dinner between 1 and 2. In the afternoon, then it was time to go back up to Sligo Lock again then and meet the children coming back from school. She'd cycle up and then the bags on the bike again and push the bike down, walk with them and back home again.
Something that keeps you busy, as you say, even without the full-time job of being a lock keeper. So presumably yeah. when quite often she'd get back to the lock and there'd be a barge or a vessel waiting to get through.
It could be waiting for her, yeah. And usually there would be one. But then on top of all that work she had to do, she also had to clean the back drains every year. Every lock had to clean their area, their district, it was called. It's an overflow of the river, of the Barrow. So the water had to be kept flowing in that drain at all times. So if you were walking down the Barrow track and the river Barrow's on your right-hand side of the track and the back drain is on your left-hand side, that drain had to be cleaned. Every lock keeper had to clean their own area each year. I have an old letter that was sent to Maggie in 1952, and it came from James's Three Harbour, from the district engineer, whose name was A.M. Plumer.
And this is St. James's Harbour in Dublin,
Dublin,
the other end
yeah.
of the Grand Canal, right?
Yes. Okay. So the letter said, "I am again calling the attention of all lock keepers on the River Barrow to the fact that it is their duty to clean the back drains in their districts each summer. The cleaning of the drains should be commenced not later than the end of June and in all cases must be completed and the drains ready for inspection by the 15th of August. And she had to go up and meet the lock keeper from the other side halfway, and she had to go down below the house and meet the lock keeper there halfway. And that was 3/4 of a mile at each side of the house then.
Yeah, yeah. So she's got to do both sides as well, right?
Yeah, so there was 1.5 miles. And she wrote back then on the 30th of July in 1952 to say that she started the drains on July the 1st and finished on the 30th of July. So she got them done in 4 weeks.
2 weeks ahead of schedule, yeah.
Yes, and they were ready for his inspection. So he'd come down then and inspected. And for doing that then, she got a bonus, which she'd always have it done on time, of course. And the bonus would get to her then before Christmas. So they were always looking forward to the Christmas bonus.
Yeah, I'd say that's hard work. And that was every year, do you think?
Oh, yeah, it had to be done every year. Yeah, say it in the letter that all lock keepers were required to do this every year. And this guy had to come and inspect them every year as well. That was summer on the river. I remember 1 year, I went down there to overnight and my mum brought me down and I was going to stay in the lock house for 2 nights. And it was really, really wet time now. The river was fairly well up, but it wasn't in flood, you know. And I remember when I woke up after the second night's sleep and I got dressed and I was coming down the stairs in the morning, Maggie shouted up at me that I wasn't to come down the stairs. We couldn't get down because the kitchen was flooded.
Uh-oh.
It rained so much and the water came up so high that the whole area was underwater. This would seem like an annual event as well that didn't bother them at all, you know. But as long as the cow was up out of the water outside, that was the main priority. But they were walking around the water in the kitchen below. And my dad came that day then to collect me. And I remember him coming in and crossing the kitchen to the stairs in waders. And I got up on his back and he brought me over to the window And right outside the window, and I often wondered why there was a little boat always tied at the window there. And he put me into the boat, and I had to leave there by boat then that particular time. But it was also very difficult then to see. The children then couldn't go to school then these times because they couldn't get out. Yeah, it was awful, awful tough at that time.
Did any of them swim, by the way?
They all swam. Yeah, all summer to be in the water, like swimming around, yeah. Fishing and swimming, and they had a great life there in the summer. But the winter was a completely different thing altogether. The commercial traffic on the river was coming to an end at this time then. It was the end of the 50s and that, you know. They had switched all goods from the river to the rail and road at this time then. So she didn't really know, I think, where she stood then as far as job was concerned, and so
yeah, that must have been a little unsettling, because I mean, I guess you could see the writing on the wall for the canals by the late 50s.
Yeah. But then she had a brother then, my uncle Jack, who had spent a lot of years in Boston in America at the time, and he came home on holidays then around that time as well, and he understood like the difficulty I had there in the winter. And he made her an offer then, I think, that she couldn't refuse. He was doing quite well in the US at the time. And he offered to bring them over to Boston and just to leave the whole family move to America, which was a huge step, a huge lot to think about at the time, you know.
Mm-hmm. All of them, I mean, obviously Paddy as well.
Paddy, the whole lot, yeah, the whole lot. There was four at this stage, and I think there was another one after in America. I think there was five altogether.
So they went, they upped.
So they upped and they went, yeah. Well, that was the last time anyone ever lived in the lockhouse at Sligoff. The day she went out and closed the door there, that no one ever lived in it after. And it's such a beautiful, beautiful place in the summer, like I said, but you can't get in or out in the winter then, you know.
Okay, and were you still in contact after they moved to Boston? Were you able to keep in touch?
When I became a lock keeper, I used to take pictures of the lock house and the area around it and put it up on Facebook, and they loved that. They loved that over there in Boston then, you know. They used to say, send us more pictures, you know. All they wanted to do was see the old house again. But the last time that Maggie and Paddy came home, they came home like several times on holidays. And the last time she came home, she asked me to know would I bring her down to see the house. She had gone down to see it for the last time. And when she seen it, she had her little cry. And she told me that if it wasn't for the difficulty during the winters with the children going to school, she would have never left it.
Well, John, that's a very poignant story. Thank you for that. And as you say, you became a lock keeper yourself. I know you started out driving trucks, which is probably a pretty exhausting process, but how did you go from trucking to lock keeping?
I did that for a number of years, and then I got married, and my son was here. I remember coming home one Friday evening, and he was crying. He didn't even know who I was, you know. So I knew I was away from home too long then. So I knew it was time to change, and I was just, as luck would have it, there was a lock-keeping job came up at Fenniscourt Lock, and I was actually asked to know what I do it because I was living so close by. Didn't take me too long to make up my mind on that one, and I took the job, and I was there then for 33 years as a lock-keeper until I retired. And I retired in 2017. I went in around 1983 or that. When I started, I was CIE I went working for, because they were the ones who were running the river at that time.
So. Okay, and so you were a lock keeper. Did they have? Were you sort of a water patroller, or did that come later?
That came later. Yeah, I went in as a lock keeper, came out as a water patroller.
Okay, so you spent 33 years on the river. Wow. Well, you must have seen plenty of changes, John. And as you say, everything's very technological now with iPhones and Facebook and everything. But it sounds like you were born to work on the river. Do you miss it?
I was never like going to work. I loved every day of it.
And
And my sincere thanks to John O'Neill for taking the time to talk with me about his memories of swimming cows and lock keeping, and his aunt, Mary O'Gorman, who went from the banks of the Barrow to the distant city of Boston. My sincere thanks to series producer Ali Bunbury and the team at 11 for 10 Productions. You can find further information about this series and Irish waterways generally on www.waterwaysireland.org. And you'll find my own historical archive of stories from the past, mostly Irish, at turtlebunbury.com.